Welcome to Exhibition, an Xbox podcast, episode number 83. My name is Samuel Adams, and Merry Christmas to everybody who is celebrating. This year's show does fall on Christmas, so whether you're gathering with friends and family or just spending some time diving into the games you love the most, I do hope you make the most of it. But on this week's show, we're talking more about High on Life on Game Pass and Justin Roiland's comments on how successful the launch has been on the service. But on top of that, we also have some exclusivity talk on both sides of the fence from Xbox and from PlayStation, and much more to get into. So sit back, relax, grab a hot cup of your favorite beverage because it is very cold outside and you really should stay. But without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into it. On last week's show, we talked about High on Life, a new game from Justin Roiland and the team at Squanch Games that's basically a Rick and Morty first-person shooter. And since the game launched, it has earned some very impressive accolades. First and foremost, it is the biggest day one launch on Game Pass for 2022, and it's the third biggest Game Pass launch in the history of the service. But also earlier this week, we saw it become the third most played game on Xbox, behind only Warzone 2.0 and Fortnite. So in short, the game is out there playing with the big dogs, even though Squanch Games is only really an indie developer, maybe a AA developer, which just speaks to the quality and the humorous experience that people are getting from this game. I think it's really landing with people in a very, very positive way. But two of those accolades belong to Game Pass, specifically because it is really elevating the game to a level that it may not have hit otherwise. And so Justin Roiland, the mind behind Rick and Morty and Solar Opposites, sat down to talk with the team at Xbox about the decision-making process behind putting the game on Game Pass, where he said, quote, "Before we decided to pull the trigger on it, I spoke with a handful of other studio folks who did Game Pass, and I ultimately came to the conclusion based off of what I heard, that is, it's a value add. Because essentially, there's a lot of people that would otherwise not have picked up the game and played it. And for those people, if you believe in what you've made, and you feel confident that you've made something special or different, and we do with our game, those folks can become evangelists in a way for the title." That is a really, really great point, and a good example of how Game Pass can help spread the word about your game just because more people are playing it. And so as an example, I talked about the game kind of going viral on TikTok a couple of minutes ago. When you have a game go viral on TikTok like that, people will look into the game and see more about where this noise originated from, how it is in the context of the game. They'll just be more interested in the title itself. And so let's say the person that clipped that out of the game and put it on TikTok played the game via Game Pass. You're reaching tens of millions of people through that sound because that one person played the game on Game Pass. But that's on the macro level. That's on the creator level. If you're in a high school lunchroom and 3 people out of 100 have Game Pass, those 3 kids could be playing High on Life. They go back to their lunch table and they say, "Guys, I'm playing this new game. It's hilarious." Those people go out and they buy the game, or they subscribe to Game Pass, however they want to get the game, and then they start spreading the word through their friends. It's a very infectious kind of way to spread the marketing of a game, and I think right now it is super effective. In fact, Justin goes on to say, "A lot of folks told me that non-Game Pass games they ship versus Game Pass games, they get 7 times the sales." End of quote, but I would say that's just all through word of mouth. That's just people becoming more aware of the fact that the game exists, and there are plenty of games that I've played that I would not have even thought of playing if they had not been included via Game Pass, and that's really where the value of the service comes in. And I've said it before, I'll always say it again, but Game Pass is a discovery engine. I would not have picked up High on Life, and I would not have played it had it not been on Game Pass, and right now I'm really enjoying my time with the game. I may have gotten it later on down the line when it was $10 or $15, but the fact that I'm playing it in the month that it launched, for free with my subscription, you can't really beat that. I think that's a big value win there. And another good example of this is something I was playing over the weekend called Gungrave Gore. And this launched on Game Pass a couple of weeks ago. But it is, as I described on Twitter, the worst best game of 2022. Because it is 2006 to its core. It feels like an old school PlayStation 2 game. The gameplay itself, kind of clunky overall. It runs perfectly fine. But I'm having a great time with it because it is included in Game Pass and it feels very nostalgic for me. It's just a fun little shoot 'em up game. And so it's those kind of experiences, the things that I would not have picked up otherwise, but that I'm glad that I'm playing, that give Game Pass the value right now. Now in 2023, you'll see more big AAA games come to it. You'll see big first party Xbox launches come to it, and all of that is very, very exciting. But the story behind High on Life and the fact that it is one of the biggest Game Pass launches of all time and the biggest of 2022 shows that Microsoft is making some really, really smart moves here when it comes to cutting these deals with third parties. Because now High on Life is part of the success story of Game Pass, and Game Pass is part of the success story of High on Life. Jumping over to talk more about exclusivity, the Activision Blizzard acquisition conversations are continuing through this bleak, desolate winter that we are all currently living. And from those conversations, we're getting some very interesting little tidbits that reporters are beginning to pull out. First and foremost, Microsoft has said that they anticipate three future titles, all of which have been redacted, and all of which are designed to be played primarily alone or in small groups, to be Xbox and PC exclusives. Those are all the details we have on the Bethesda side of things. So, the question is, what games are we talking about here? And are currently announced Xbox exclusives inclusive in this conversation, in this new statement? Because if so, then we have three future titles that are confirmed to be Xbox and PC exclusives. Would that be Redfall, Starfield, and potentially Fallout? Would that be Redfall, Starfield, and Elder Scrolls 6? Would that be the new Indiana Jones game alongside Redfall and Starfield? What does that little charcuterie of exclusivity look like right now? And only time will tell. But if I had to guess, I would say this is including the Starfield and Redfall announcements, because that seems to be the point they're trying to make here. They've announced a few things are going to be Xbox and PC exclusive, but I think the statement is redacted primarily because of that third entity, that third game that they have yet to share more details on. And so I think we'll find out more about what that is potentially in 2023. I would love to see more about what Bethesda has cooking at the Xbox Game Showcase, whenever that rolls around in May or June, but potentially even at a smaller event earlier in the year. I do think that Microsoft would probably save their big hitters for the big June Summer Game Fest style events. But that's not all of the exclusivity talk that we do have this week. We also have Microsoft confirming that Sony has blocked four games from hitting Xbox forever, according to Windows Central. Now, I want to put a big asterisk beside this one, a big caveat that I personally think that Windows Central is reading into this one a bit too much. And this is posted by Jez Gordon over once again at Windows Central on the gaming side of things, where he points out a new statement from the Microsoft filings that says, quote, "In addition to having outright exclusive content, Sony has also entered into arrangements with third-party publishers which require the exclusion of Xbox from the set of platforms these publishers can distribute their games on. Some prominent examples of these agreements include Final Fantasy VII Remake from Square Enix, Bloodborne from From Software, and the upcoming Final Fantasy XVI from Square Enix, and the recently announced Silent Hill 2 Remastered from Bloober Team," end quote. So the question here is, are these statements referring to timed exclusives, or are these statements referring to permanent exclusives? And I think that seeing Silent Hill 2 Remastered on this list, that's a bit of a reach, because that game was just announced. There has not been anything about this not being a timed exclusive. In fact, I believe that I read somewhere that it was a 2-year timed exclusive on PlayStation, and I could be wrong about that specifically. But again, we have Bloodborne, which is more or less a given. That's just an understood PlayStation exclusive. Final Fantasy 16, I would have thought that would have come to other platforms, but again, I think it's a launch console exclusive. I think that it could come to Xbox in the future. So there's a lot of confusion around the exclusivity conversations and figuring out who has what for how long they have it. And ultimately, the biggest takeaway here from both of these stories is that I cannot wait for these conversations to be over and people can just get back to enjoying the games. Now, on this latter statement, I think there is a statement that there is to be made, or that needs to be made, about the fact that Sony is talking about Microsoft having potentially exclusive content on their platform or making Xbox the best place to play. You're doing the same thing. You're throwing that money around. And so that's how the game is played in today's day and age. It's an unfortunate reality in the world that we're living in and in the environment that we're gaming in. I think that the exclusive content is what brings value to the platform. Nintendo's got tons of exclusives. Microsoft has tons of exclusives. And Sony has tons of exclusives. And those third-party deals that are set up, it is what it is. Whether they're permanent or whether they're temporary, that's just the name of the game. So the deliberations continue. We'll see more at the beginning of 2023. Again, this deal was supposed to close in June. We'll see if that's the case. It seems like there's a lot more here, but between the FTC fighting the deal, Microsoft countersuing and putting out counterstatements, it's just a massive mess. And I think I'd prefer just to continue playing the games, enjoying my Game Pass. And if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Life goes on. It's all good. Earlier this week, Hideo Kojima sat down with IGN to talk more about his upcoming projects, of which I am very excited. I know at the Game Awards, one announcement I was not expecting to see is Death Stranding 2. That's a game that's coming. It's, of course, going to be a PlayStation exclusive. More than likely, it will come to PC at some point in the future, just as the predecessor did. But we also saw some conversation around the upcoming Xbox exclusive title, which does not have much detail right now. But Hideo said, quote, "In addition to DS2, we are making one other unusual title. The project we're working on with Microsoft is one I have been thinking about for 5 or 6 years already. The project required infrastructure that was never needed before, so I discussed it with lots of different big companies and gave presentations, but they really seemed to think that I was mad. It was ultimately Microsoft who showed that they understood, and now we are working together on the project, including the technology front," end quote. So that all is very exciting. First and foremost, getting a Kojima project as an Xbox exclusive is a big win in the eyes of gamers, because when you see Kojima, you know something big, something unusual, and something very impressive is on the way. And I think that a lot of people would say Kojima is overrated. I think this man is an artist in every sense of the word. He makes some phenomenal pieces. Of course, he's got an incredible legacy within the gaming industry. And so seeing one of his projects come to Xbox on the Xbox first kind of front is something that I think is very exciting for me. But on top of that, the technology first side of things, in my mind, means this game is going to have a cloud element to it, which means that visually, it's going to be pulling from a lot of resources that are beyond what a console can provide. And so there's a lot going on here behind the scenes to make this game run. And I think that Microsoft being able to provide the technology for that speaks to how it can be a home for some very complex games in the future. You know, if you need a little bit of extra power to get those textures looking good, pull from the cloud. If you need to be able to connect people in a different way, pull from the power of the cloud. It adds so much additional flexibility to the way that you work. And I think that Microsoft, again, being a leader in the tech space, can bring so much value to the gaming side of the operation, to where there's so much cohesion in every way that your game is running, being played, being enjoyed, being distributed, that it can really become a one-stop shop, all needs are met platform for a lot of developers out there. So looking to the future, I'm excited to learn more about this project. I'm excited to play Death Stranding too. Just the fact that these projects are happening and that Kojima is getting involved in every sense of the word on every front is something that I think everybody has a reason to be excited about. To wrap up today's show, one of 2022's biggest indies is finally coming to Steam and Xbox, and that is Sifu. The game launched on PS4 and PS5 as a console exclusive, and then it came to Nintendo Switch a few months after launch there. But it's a game that a lot of people really enjoyed diving into, and by no means is it getting a 10 out of 10 across the board, but I've seen it included in a lot of best of the year list, whether it's game of the year or best fighting game of the year, whatever it might be, people have really enjoyed Sifu. And so as somebody who has not had the chance to get their hands on it, this is something that's really exciting for me. But the official Sifu game Twitter account wrote and said, quote, "In case you missed it before, Sifu is finally coming to Steam and Xbox right alongside Title Update 4 Arenas. Test your skill and unlock new moves in a variety of new environments and challenges on more platforms than ever, and you can wishlist on Steam now." There is no official release date for this update as it stands today, but I would expect it sometime in mid-January, maybe early February. Again, it's just exciting to see this game coming to more people than ever, and with a big title update like this, it certainly gives a lot of people a reason to go back. But that wraps up this week's episode of Exhibition, an Xbox podcast. If you enjoy the show and you're new here, be sure to hit that subscribe button over on YouTube or add the show to your podcast feed of choice and get it delivered right to you each and every Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm very excited about next week's show. We're going to be diving into what's coming in 2023, digging into my most anticipated games. A lot of good stuff to look forward to there, so I hope to see you back in a week's time. But until then, enjoy the holiday season. I'll talk to you soon, and remember, keep on playing.